To the Kill Your Darlings podcast. I'm Estelle Tang, the online editor, and I'm here with Kavita Dara.
Hi, I'm Kavita Dara, publisher at Brass Monkey Books.
So Kavita, I'm very excited. We're here to talk about Brass Monkey Books' first book, Anjum Hassan's Lunatic in My Head. But before we do that, maybe tell us a little bit about Brass Monkey Books and how that got started.
Brass Monkey Books has been set up to publish books from India, literature from India, and we will then go on to do some non-fiction that engages with the Australia-India relationship, but primarily we're doing Indian fiction.
Mm. And where does the name come from?
The name comes from Salman Rushdie's Midnight's Children. I read it when I was 16 and it completely changed my idea of literature and how words and culture work together. And the brass monkey is a character in that book.
Oh, okay. It's quite a keen reflection of what you're hoping to do, I suppose.
Yes.
But is it true? So you went to India to look for books to publish through Brass Monkey Books.
Yeah, I got a AsiaLink arts management residency last year, and I went to spend 4 months in India, and I was working at a small publisher over there, and then went around to various festivals and fairs, and basically I was just looking for books that I thought were fantastic and would work for the Australian market, but that we don't get here for one reason or the other.
Yeah, and how did you come across Anjum Hassan's work particularly?
I found her on someone's blog and then tried to get the book in Australia and couldn't, of course, so went over and bought it and devoured it and was talking to various people, and she just seemed like the perfect. It was a perfect book and the perfect author, I thought, for the first title for Brass Monkey Books.
Yeah, and when was the book first published? Was it quite recently?
It was published in 2007 by a wonderful Indian publisher called Zuban Books.
Yeah, yeah. And what kind is that, kind of a literary fiction type publisher or imprint?
They do a lot of literary fiction. They're a women's publisher primarily. But yes, they do. They do. They have excellent taste.
There's something in common there. So Australian readers would be quite familiar with Indian writers like Arundhati Roy and, of course, the Aravind Adiga, the 2008 Booker Prize winner. What do you think global audiences have responded to in books like this about Indian culture?
I think a lot of it is people are already interested in India, and those books in particular offered a side of India that I think people were curious about. You know, there's a lot of rural life in it. Adiga's book especially talked about a side of India that doesn't usually get talked about outside of India, which is those of the lower classes and their resentment towards the middle and upper classes. So I think that was a refreshing sort of change for a lot of Western audiences.
Mm, and that's something quite different to anything that is immediate reality too, isn't it? It's that kind of totally different world, totally different kind of socioeconomic structure.
Yeah, and I think it was a great contrast to the majority of books that we get by Indian writers who live in, you know, either the UK or the US and tend to write books about a migrant experience, which, you know, is perfectly valid, and I'm really interested in them as well because I'm a migrant, but it offers a view of how a brown person's fitting into a white world rather than how a brown person's working in their own world and the challenges they face in their own world. So I think that was really, that sort of struck a chord with a lot of people as well.
Mm. And Kavita, you're from India yourself.
Yes.
What kinds of writers did you grow up reading?
Enid Blyton. I read a lot of Indian sort of folk tale-y stuff when I was little, so that was my Indian sort of side. But I read pretty much the same as I think anyone in Australia would be reading. I grew up in Singapore mainly, so the books we got there were from, I guess you could say the British Empire type reading list. So a lot of Enid Blyton, yeah.
Yeah, and that's quite, and that's something that in Lunatic in My Head, which we'll come to later, but there is a big kind of Western cultural influence.
Mm-hmm.
So Anjum Hassan is from Shillong, which is where Lunatic in My Head is set. Mm-hmm. It's the capital of Meghalaya, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Land of the Clouds, yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Which is in India's northeast. Mm-hmm. And what's Shillong like? It's a small town, isn't it?
I haven't been yet, much to my shame, but a lot of people outside of India and in India actually haven't travelled there much because it is seen as a more isolated sort of place. But I hear it's beautiful. When I was working in Delhi this time around, I made a friend from there, and the way she was describing it, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, wow. Well, I have to definitely put it on the travel list. But the book tells a story of three different people. Ferdo, a young teacher struggling to do a PhD on Jane Austen, which is something I think a lot of people will probably be able to sympathise with. And Sophie, who's an 8-year-old girl. And Aman, who's kind of a young man in his 20s trying to sit for a civil services exam for the second time. The title, Lunatic in My Head, comes from the Pink Floyd song, mm-hmm. Brain Damage. And all of these characters are kind of fascinated with aspects of Western culture in some way or another, mm. or it's kind of put in their lives, whether through education or one way or another. Why do you think that is? Is that just part of the empire's influence?
It is part of the empire's influence, and you know, especially in the middle classes, a lot of those things like Jane Austen or having, you know, a Nike brand T-shirt or whatever the modern day equivalent is, all of that is seen as a status symbol, and it's seen as a way of being upwardly mobile.
And Ferdo's interest in Jane Austen is telling too, because Hassan tells about everyday life in Shillong. Mm-hmm. The book's really immersive, so the characters often speak Hindi without any translation mm-hmm. given, and the smells and the foods and the everyday life, everything's just really alive in this book. Mm-hmm. Was that important to you to kind of keep? Were you careful of how to translate that for an English-speaking audience?
Yeah, I was, and I sort of deliberated over that a number of times, and in the end, I decided I'd leave it, and you know, italicize it so it isn't too much of a shock when you come across it. But I don't think readers are stupid. I think they can work a lot of things out. And as a child growing up in Singapore, if I could work out what a scone was from reading, you know, Mallory Towers or something, then I'm sure you can, in the age of the internet, you can work out what some of the food is. Yeah.
What's a blancmange? And there's what's most interesting to me about Lunatic in My Head was the kind of the tribal conflict in the book. So Shillong is populated by the Khasi tribespeople, and they're quite hostile towards the non-tribal residents, or the Dakar. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I think so.
Quite difficult. And how does this affect all the three main characters, all of whom are Dakar?
Yeah. Well, I think it obviously means that they're outsiders in the place that they grew up in. And I think that's one of the things that I really loved about this novel, that it touched on that thing that people, you know, love about the outsider. I mean, one of the reasons people love the migrant novels is because they talk about being an outsider in a different place. And this is sort of taking it into another level because they're actually outsiders in their own country, and yet they're not.
And although there is a lot in Lunatic in My Head which is really culturally specific, there's also a lot that, you know, anyone can relate to. For example, Aman, who is about to take this kind of really important, like excruciatingly difficult kind of test for the second time, he really wants to get out of Shillong. He wants to get out of this small town, but he realises there's really nowhere else for him to go except maybe another small town that's almost exactly the same. I mean, what resonated most for you in this book when you first read it?
I did love that whole idea of trying to get out of town but not actually knowing where you were going, and that idea that, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. And I think that's something that a lot of people can identify with, especially whether you live in a city or a small town, you always think there's something else somewhere else, but you're not ever quite sure what that is or if you'll even like it when you find it. So, and I think that's a big theme that, you know, anyone can identify with.
Mm. And so you mentioned earlier that with Brass Monkey Books, you're going to be doing more fiction and non-fiction. Mm. What kinds of specific things will you be looking for within that?
I'm looking for fiction, first of all, that obviously we can't get here for various reasons. But I also want to do stories that are different. I don't want the usual stories that keep going with the stereotypes that we usually get from India. I want to do the stories of people that we don't hear much about. And that means mainly looking at books that have either been picked up by small publishers in India or not picked up at all because they're too controversial. Mm. And I'm quite happy to publish things that are controversial over here because I think everyone should be able to know more about a country, you know, based more on literature maybe than on Bollywood or cricket or
yeah. Well, I mean, Shillong itself, Lunatic in My Head is quite different already from a lot of the Indian books that I've read and kind of the movies, you know, set in India that I've seen. Just the setting and the people seem different. As it's because it's quite far to the east, isn't it?
So it is.
It borders. It's near.
It's basically bordering towards China, Burma, Bangladesh. That sort of area. So the people there are very mixed, and there are a lot of different influences. And again, because they weren't a big focus of industrialization, some things have just sort of stayed the same to a certain extent as well. And hence, you know, these books are being written set in sort of the 1990s, but the cultural influences are still people like bands like Pink Floyd and Bob Dylan. And there's still a huge Bob Dylan festival that goes on in Shillong, you know, so, yeah.
Wow, that sounds amazing. We might have to decamp over there for a little while. And coming back to Melbourne, Australia, do you think, I mean, obviously having started Brass Monkey Books this year, do you think Melbourne is kind of ripe for another small imprint? Do you think it's a good place to start a small publishing?
I think if you're going to start one anywhere in Australia, it would have to be Melbourne. It's seriously just amazing that the interest and the support and the generosity that I've experienced since I've started this up. And you know, when I was in India, I had to go and give a talk somewhere about the Australian publishing industry, and I came up with all these statistics about, you know, bookshops and stuff like that. And Melbourne is it. We have the most independent bookshops, most number of writers live in Melbourne, in Australia. So yeah, this is it. I think Melbourne's the perfect place. Yeah.
And you mentioned working with a small press in India. What's a small press publishing scene like over there?
It's very different. Small press over there kind of almost means something else because the publishing industry over there is almost entirely made up of small presses apart from the multinationals. So it probably has different connotations to what we call small press over here. A lot of publishing over there traditionally has been family businesses that, you know, sort of they've been in the family for a while, and so they have a sort of small press feel about them, but they're actually really old and really they actually have a wider network than what we would call small press over here. But it was absolutely fascinating and you know, it was really valuable in appreciating as well some things about the Australian publishing industry and seeing as well how some things can be done differently.
And we're going to be able to see Anjum Hassan very shortly in Australia. Yes. Tell us a little bit about what her itinerary will be like.
Oh, well, Anjum will be appearing at the Asia Book Room in Canberra, which is a lovely bookshop in Belcon that specialises in Asian books, and then at Fuller's Bookshop in Hobart. And then on to the Brisbane Writers Festivals and Melbourne Writers Festival.
Of course, which will be wonderful. You can all see her there. Thank you so much, Kavita. And thank you for listening to this Kill Your Darlings podcast. Podcasts appear fortnightly. And for more information, visit www.killyourdarlingsjournal.com.